You're too damn white, guys.
Welcome back to another Too Damn White Guys. I'm Julian Smith.
I'm Andrew Rader.
And today we are talking about A Brief History of Evil. Why have we chosen this strange, strange topic, Andrew?
Yeah, I actually decided this would be a good topic because I heard the song by the Rolling Stones, Sympathy for the Devil, which I'd heard before. I'd always sort of heard, but I never really thought about it and never listened to the lyrics. The song is all about how there is no devil and the devil is you and me. So, you know, the lyrics are really good. If you listen to them, it's about the Russian Revolution. And it's about, it goes throughout history and the Nazis and stuff like that. So the song is all just about evil is subtle. Evil is, you wouldn't even know evil if you saw it necessarily, right? I mean, sometimes you would, like looking back, there's lots of examples like concentration camps and Nazis that are definitely evil. But there's a lot of actions that you're not even sure if they're good or evil. And evil is kind of blundered into rather than planned,
right.
I think.
Yeah, there's so many different people think so many different things about evil and, you know, why. No matter what you think about evil, there's no denying bad things happen. Like, you know, there's natural disasters. People do bad things to each other and to themselves. And, you know, I think I'm interested in this topic because, you know, before you can even deal with bad things happen, you have to get, you know, you have to get on the same page about why they happen. So you can't really resolve problems until you know where they're coming from. So I think it would be, you know, we're going to be kind of ironically calling this a Bible study because we're going to be diving into a little bit of Bible, but it's not all going to be Bible. I think the reason the Bible's interesting when it comes to evil is because it's the only philosophical book we have that really personifies evil, like with, you know, there's like the devil and demons and things like that. And there are like demons in other books, but like, you know, the Bible is, even the Bible isn't really completely agreeing with itself 100% of the time about why bad things happen and where evil comes from. Because early Bible was, you know, much more concerned with just like law and things like that. Whereas like later parts, you know, whereas bad forces started becoming more personified because it was just like this idea kind of caught on. And so they started putting like actual personalities behind these forces. So we're going to be kind of looking at a little bit of that today. And then I know, Andrew, you've got some more like pop culture and just like general science stuff about evil planned. So it should be a fun episode. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Evil is you and me.
Evil is you and me, and I don't want to give any
lyrics.
I don't want to give any spoilers too early on, but I personally think that evil is due to our reptilian mind. I think that most things people would call evil are impulses from our reptilian mind, but I think the problem with evil is that the impulses from your reptilian mind aren't intrinsically bad. It's just like when you dive too far into your reptilian impulses, they can steer you the wrong way sometimes because you have two other parts of your brain that need to function. But you know, we're slightly getting ahead of ourselves, but that's kind of like a precursor to where we're going. So what do you think? Should we take it to the news now?
News, yeah.
Are you going to tell me the news?
Andrew tells Julian the news.
Okay, so there was a guy in South Carolina who bought like $550 of Girl Scout cookies because it was really cold. So he bought them all so that they would be able to stop selling cookies and go inside and get warm.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
It's really nice. And because the story went viral, the cops found out about him and arrested him for drug charges. So.
Wait, what?
I think unrelated to the Girl Scout cookies, but possibly that's why he had all the money.
Oh, so he was a drug dealer or something?
He was a drug dealer, I guess, yeah.
And he got busted because this story made him like a public figure on accident.
Because I guess he probably used drug money to buy the Girl Scout cookies.
Interesting. Well, that is a moral conundrum right there.
Yeah, actually.
A drug dealer buying out all the Girl Scout cookies so these little girls can go home. Like, that's a moral conundrum.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
All right, so what else happened this week?
World's largest bee was found. It's an inch and a half long. It's like the size of your thumb.
Whoa.
Yeah. We thought it was extinct. We've thought it was extinct since 1858 when it was first discovered, and then it was never seen again for over 100 years. Then one was seen in the 1980s, and then not again till just now.
So this is like a specific breed of bee that we haven't seen?
Specific species of bee, yeah. It's in Indonesia, and it's really big.
Wow. Would not want to see that thing. I am kind of terrified of things with stingers because I had some bad incidents as a kid. Keep them away.
This one has giant mandibles too.
Yeah.
But I think they're friendly. Bees are mostly pretty nice.
Yeah,
just
they
leave them alone and they'll leave you alone.
Yeah. It's mainly the wasps and hornets I'm afraid of.
Yeah, wasps are jerks.
Yeah, they're jerks. Well put.
They're evil.
Yeah, they're evil. They got the devil in them.
Yeah. And if you want to embrace good, you can download the app from the Pope, which is the Click to Pray app. So the Vatican has a new app to pray.
It prays for you so you don't have to?
I think it ties in the Pope's prayer. So I don't know if it brings the Pope's prayers or if it's kind of just like click to pray.
I don't want to quote myself, but this is kind of like my pre-blessed food video from 2011 or something.
So like pre-blessed food. That was great video. Yeah.
It's kind of like my parents hated that video. They asked me to take it down. They were like, this is degrading to Christianity. I was like, well, I didn't want it to be. It's just a joke.
Yeah.
You don't take it so personally. So what else happened? Was that it?
Well, the important story is what's going on with India and Pakistan. So currently parts of the U.S. are at DEFCON 4. So DEFCON 4 is defense rating system of threat. It's like a threat rating system. So 5 is totally everything's fine. 1 is nuclear war.
Is this like the doomsday clock?
Similar idea. So that's how many seconds to midnight it is.
Yeah.
But this is an actual U.S. defense rating system. So this is actually used by the military, whereas the nuclear clock countdown, I think, was just invented by scientists for public awareness.
Right. Okay. Wow. Yeah. So it's actually a little more serious that it's a military level rating system.
Yeah, it's actually not uniform across the world. It's different organizations within the military can have different ratings, but it's kind of like actual what is the threat of nuclear war. So, yeah. The other time it was elevated is the Yom Kippur War in 1973. It was 3, I think, because Syria and Egypt were close to overrunning Israel, and Israel had nuclear weapons, so they possibly could have used that if it was on the brink of losing.
Wow.
That was another possible nuclear flashpoint in the world.
It's crazy. I hope we can overcome these challenges. I hope we can get on the same page.
Yes, but this, like the affairs of humans in decision-making, especially when facing confrontations and potentially backing down from confrontations, is exactly the topic of our episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Where evil comes from. Because obviously a nuclear war would be horrendous, kill tons, like millions of people, possibly be a catastrophe, even if it wasn't just a very limited one. Mm-hmm. Even catastrophe for the climate, environment of Earth could be deadly, cause tons of damage. And it's a result of decision-making of a few people. Mm-hmm. There's no devil involved in that. And that is clearly evil. Any kind of nuclear war, I think you could argue, is at least some element of evil.
That's
a human decision, right?
I think that's another reason this topic is so important, because while I don't know many Christians that like believe in the devil, you know, I know some that do. But like, you know, most Christians I know today are like pretty open-minded about what evil is and a little more balanced. But, you know, Western culture is like so heavily influenced by the Bible. And, you know, it's interesting because the Bible is such an interesting book because, you know, the New Testament doesn't agree with the Old Testament. They're two totally different books. And I think a lot of Christians overlook this. I mean, Judaism is a very, very different religion. It's much more mystic, mysticism and things like that. Whereas Christianity is like kind of like quasi historical. I feel like they say it's historical that Jesus died and things like that, and then rose again, things like that. But, you know, also Western culture is like so heavily dependent on voters and things like that. So it's like, you've got this weird island of people here in America that like believe that evil is a personified force, and these people are voting politicians into office based on those philosophies. And these, I mean, it's probably not entirely this simple. I'm probably like, I'm making leaps and bounds with, you know, words here, but what I see is like, you know, you have all these different countries that are fighting over there's like philosophical differences. There's different ways of approaching these problems. And I see that as that's the scariest part of this problem to me, is that like, we're not even speaking the same language with these other countries, you know? So how are we gonna work these things out if we can't get on the same page about why these bad things are happening in the first place?
Well, I think we're all human, and humans, even if we, our religions or whatever, approach these evil in different ways, it's easy, or it's possible, to find common ground anyway, just on the basis of being human. We have a lot more in common with other people than differences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just cultural differences, really. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't understand really why that's a problem.
Why what's a problem?
Well, how it's difficult to find common ground, or, I mean, what you're getting at with...
I guess I'm just saying, like, if you think evil is a force in the sky that you have to watch out for,
right,
versus something in yourself that you have to keep in balance and in check, then that's going to really skew the way you approach problems.
Gotcha. So, yeah, it's hard to reason with that. Like, if evil is absolute versus subjective you can talk about.
Right.
But absolute is, like, ends conversations. I think that's why it's popular, by the way, why it's an idea that's been so pervasive, mm-hmm. because evil as a force is easy to understand.
Yeah.
Whereas it's really complicated. It's like the nuance thing. It's really complicated to say, well, evil is based on repercussions and it's based on outcomes and it's situational, subjective.
Ask anybody who's tried to read Leviticus or Numbers from the Mosaic texts, and they'll tell you the exact same thing, because those books are literally just law after law after law after law.
Yeah, it's straightforward. Leviticus is kind of, like, interesting. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have read Leviticus.
Yeah.
And Leviticus is, if your ox gores your neighbor, you have to, like, do certain things, and if it gores your neighbor's ox, you have to replace the ox, and it's, like, very straightforward, mm-hmm. and it's an eye for an eye. So it's, like, very straightforward about what different repercussions are for different actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was the basis of, that was the original form of evil, as far as, like, the New Testament or the Old Testament goes, is, like, it was just, you know, that's why there were so many laws. They were trying to create social cohesion, mm-hmm. and I think it's because, you know, these were the first civilizations in this area, in the Mesopotamian region. Society was booming for the first time ever, and all these people were, like, coming up with laws and things. And, you know, these weren't the only places coming up with laws, obviously. There were tons of other cultures doing it at the same time. But the point is that these forces of, like, good and evil, like devil and the devil and God, whereas I guess, like, God always existed as an idea, even with pagans, they were, like, kind of obsessed with, like, different gods and things. But evil wasn't really painted as a force with a persona behind it until late Judaism, like kind of around New Testament time, actually. Mm. It's because they borrowed a lot of ideas from the Greeks with how, like, Greek mythology, they had all these personified gods based on different forces in the world. And, you know, that it's, you know, where Christianity borrowed a lot from those teachings from the Greeks, when they, like, you know, made Satan a person, instead of, whereas in the Old Testament, Satan was just kind of like a group of demons, or like some kind of, like, unseen, like, you know, negative force, but it wasn't like a persona.
Yeah, I think it's maybe because in the Old Testament, they didn't really have to account for outsiders. Mm-hmm. The Jewish laws basically guide how you treat other Jews. I mean, they may have referred to other people, but it's basically a set of laws for a close-knit society.
Right.
And others were, like, the Egyptians who enslaved them, or the Canaanites or whatever. Mm-hmm. Basically, like, people they were allowed to go and conquer and slay, and the laws didn't apply to them. The laws only applied to the Jews, basically. So,
right.
As the New Testament, you're right, there's a lot of Greek culture by that time. It's a very active place in the world, and there's Romans, and there's Greeks, and there's Middle Easterners, and all this stuff. And so I think maybe the wider concepts were brought in to regulate dealings with outsiders, mm-hmm. whereas it wasn't needed in the Old Testament.
Right. Well, this is actually the first place I wanted to start in the discussion of evil, as it pertains to the Bible anyways, is, like, I think, and I'm not, I just want to start by saying I'm not a Bible scholar. I am, like, a Bible enthusiast. I grew up with the Bible, and as I've grown older, I've become more fascinated with how it came together, because it was written over a long period of time and things. So I've done a lot of research, and I'm actually friends. I want to plug my friend's book, Richard Elliot Friedman. This is The Bible with Sources Revealed. Anybody who is interested in learning about the Bible and how it came together, this book is it's the first five books of the Bible, and it has all the different passages laid out in different fonts and colors so you can see when they were written and by whom. And this is an invaluable resource if you're interested in the origins of the Bible. I highly recommend it. So this is written by Richard Elliot Friedman, who's been on the podcast a few times. He's a good friend, and he's taught me so much. I just wanted to let people know I'm not a Bible scholar. I'm just an enthusiast who has done a lot of research. So take all of this, you know, for whatever it's worth to you. But this is just something we thought would be interesting to talk about. So there's that. Sounded like you were going to say something.
Well, aren't your parents ministers or something like that?
They are. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, you would think you'd get exposure through that too.
I'd get exposure through that? What do you mean?
Yeah. Like growing up, you'd get exposure to the Bible.
Oh, yeah. I grew up with the book. I've read it multiple times all the way through. Yeah. You know, I'm very familiar with the Bible. Only like as an adult, I've become fascinated with understanding how it came together. And, you know, that's understanding how it came together has really changed the way I read it. But I've never been more interested in the Bible than I am today I really do think it's a valuable book. I think you just have, I think you read it differently when you understand where it came from. Mm-hmm. But you were saying, you were talking about, the laws and like the social cohesion and like the laws kind of pertain to how you treat other Jews, and it didn't necessarily apply to people of other cultures. And I think that's so fascinating, because I have this idea that evil began as just a mechanism for social cohesion. They wanted to organize a society where people could cohabitate and not kill each other, because, you know, survival is innately selfish. I think like you can't really, in order to stay alive, you've got to eat, you've got to claim food as your own, you've got to build shelter. There's actually a verse in the Genesis Rabbah 9:7. Now, this is a commentary on the Genesis account, which dates to like the 5th or 6th century CE. So it's a late commentary, but it's a Jewish commentary. And it says, evil is actually responsible for all the things, all the positive things we do in society, like child rearing and building shelter for yourself and going to work and things like that. It's almost saying it's like your survival instincts. It's your urge to survive that keeps you doing things that make survival possible, like having a family and things like that. So this verse, I want to read it real quick. It says, but without the evil desire, however, no man would build a house, take a wife, and beget children. And thus said Solomon, again, I considered all labor and all excelling in work, that is a man's rivalry with his neighbor. Which is fascinating. I think it's just like, I feel like ancient people had a way better grasp on what evil was than we do today, because it was before we had personified evil with the devil and things like that. And I think it's when you understand that it comes from a distortion of your own impulses, then it becomes more, it forces you to take responsibility for your own actions in the moment, in any given moment, instead of just like blaming something on something that isn't there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Actually, that's interesting, because it's kind of like how Buddhism not views evil, but human vice, at least, the desire. You actually use the word desire there. That's really interesting. That's like a Buddhism crossover almost.
Yeah.
Where like desire causes evil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although Buddhism's not really evil exactly. Like they don't have the concept exactly of evil, or the duality at least.
We're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. I promise. Another funny fact about the word evil is its earliest uses were much less heavy than it was a much less heavy word than it is today. In old times, it just meant like unpleasant. It's kind of, people would say it like we say something is like kind of annoying or something.
Oh, really?
yeah. And it was turned into a very heavily negative word in the 19th century. So very recently.
Huh. Yeah, yeah. I wonder if that's to do with like nationalism and just the need to publicize things and get attention for things, right? I mean, I'm not saying, obviously there are some things that deserve the word evil, but I think it's just in our society today, in order to get attention, you have to go big. You have to be extreme kind of thing. Whereas most things in reality are nuanced.
Right.
So yeah, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Bible is fascinating because you've got Christians who are reading the entirety of the book, like the Old Testament and the New Testament, and they're looking at it as a consistent narrative that goes all the way through. And then you have Jews who think that the Bible is really just the first five books of the Old Testament. And they're not really, they just, to them, Christianity is what Mormonism is to Christianity. It's just like, oh, this, it's just a group of people that took this other series of books and added them to our original books. But if you're going to read the Bible at all, you've got to understand what the foundation of the Bible, the Mosaic text, the first five books of the Bible, say about evil. And it really, it, they just kind of concern themselves with the laws of the land and how people interact. And Satan doesn't really, he doesn't appear at all until much, much later. It is fascinating also how it kind of evolved, and it makes sense that because of the Greeks that we would want to start like putting faces on these forces instead of just saying, well, shit happens, you know?
It's also really interesting though, because evil is something you used to like brand people with. So it's almost like divisive to have the concepts of good and evil, because it's like categorizing in our brains. And you would think almost for like causing problems with other people, you would want to put them in the evil category. It's just like another form of categorizing for divisiveness. You know what I mean? So like the Jewish tribes, if they thought the Canaanites or whatever were evil, then it makes it easier to justify subjugating them.
Totally. Yeah. This is actually in line with a theory that I have, which is impossible to prove. I've talked to so many Bible scholars about this, and they all say this is this will forever be impossible to prove because it's like it was too early in history and it's all speculative. But I think that the reason all of these laws in the Old Testament were so exclusive to the Jewish region and the people of Jewish faith is because they were second to civilization. There was already society happening for a long, long time in China and Indus River Valley. And so if you think about it, if you like kind of put yourself in the shoes of these people that are hearing rumors of thriving civilizations and complex societies to the east, you know, the Jewish people would have had to come up with a reason to join their society. So they, what do? They set up all these highly exclusive, like, if you want to be with us, you're all in or all out. Like, our God is the way. And if you don't believe in him, then you're out of the club, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my personal theory, but apparently it's impossible to prove. So it's highly, it's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, interesting how, so demons actually in Hinduism, I think they're kind of the good guys. So the big classic Ramayana is the basis for Hinduism, and actually even influences some Buddhist practices like in Thailand and stuff like that. And they have like this big story about the monkeys and the demons. And I think the monkeys are the bad guys and the demons are actually like helping or something like that. But but you're right. They do have definitely kind of like this forces. But there, because Hinduism kind of believes the universe always existed, there's no creator, there's no good, I guess, you know, universal good, maybe, and no universal evil, really. And I think that Buddhism also attributes evilness to human deeds a lot more than Christianity. Like greed, ill will, and delusion are kind of the three Buddhist things that they would kind of consider human vices. So Christian, I think good and evil, the duality of good and evil, is almost unique to Christianity. I don't know if it's unique to Western culture, because we definitely have that beyond Christianity. We definitely have it just as a concept in the West, but I don't know if it's as dual in the East. Like they definitely have like yin and yang, but those are like competing forces and not necessarily good and evil. I think it's a little more complex than that.
Yeah, well, the way I see Eastern philosophy is that, you know, they do believe in some kind of, like you could call yin and yang good and evil, but they're not mutually exclusive. Like it's not one all the time that you're supposed to be aspiring for. So like Eastern philosophy, Eastern philosophy is all about balancing your impulses, whereas the Western religions, the monotheistic religions, are more about like shunning the part of yourself that has, you know, and this makes so many things confusing. This makes sex confusing, and it totally is if you grew up in the Christian world. Sex is very confusing, and it's because when you make sex a bad thing, it it's hard to shake that concept. And then, you know, also just like, it's pretty much all your reptilian impulses are demonized in the monotheistic religions, which is funny to me because they would not have even had a scientific concept for the reptilian mind in this time. Yet in the Old Testament story, in the creation account with Adam and Eve, it's the snake, which the Christians say is the devil, which convinces Eve to take a bite of the apple, and it's a reptile. The snake is, it's like, it's funny that the bad guy in the Old Testament is a reptile, and the reptile is also, it's like your reptilian mind is the, all of the impulses that they're shunning. So it's kind of interesting.
I think that's actually, because we see more emotions in mammals and stuff like that, like snakes are perceived by us to be really cold and direct.
Well, they are,
because they are, right?
They eat
so
their
I think
young.
It's actually based on almost a scientific observation to some extent. Mm-hmm. But isn't sex okay as long as you do it in the dark over the covers with a hole cut in the cover and you don't enjoy it?
It's only okay if you're married, which here's
and you're
the
married.
Thing.
Yeah, of course. You have to be married. But, you have to be married. You have to do it in the dark. You have to not enjoy it and do it over the covers.
And here's the thing about it. It makes so much sense that sex is so taboo in monotheistic religions because, you know, they wouldn't have had it as advanced forms of contraception as we have now. And society, if you see religion as a form of social cohesion, it's ways to facilitate, you know, life in a social setting. So, you know, civilization is the idea of making child rearing more easy. And so there enter the idea of saving sex for marriage so that you don't wind up a single mother or a single father. But it's when you make it like an intrinsically bad thing that it confuses people.
I don't know if that's true. There's definitely, I think it's partly true, but I mean, a lot of tribes actually use sex as social cohesion with like multiple fathers and things like that, but they are smaller. Right. So maybe in a larger society, you need this kind of concept of marriage. But my understanding is that the concept of marriage sort of comes from ownership, and it's the same as owning like livestock or slaves. So your wife is basically your property and you can do with her as you want in like old Judaism.
Bible times.
And so it was kind of invented for that. But like sex outside marriage with like your servant girl was totally fine. Like they actually talk about how, you know, that doesn't count. Like if you have a dalliance on the side, that doesn't count for the guy, right?
Well, I attribute that to patriarchy and just like men getting to do whatever
patriarchy.
The hell they want.
And I think also maybe just the general concept of ownership and property in Western society. Like we have a strong concept of land ownership and things like that, which didn't exist in all societies. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of, I thought, where the marriage thing really came from.
Well, it makes you may be right about the marriage side. I'm more talking about the sex side, like why Christianity tells you, or I guess it's probably a Jewish idea originally, why they recommend saving sex for marriage. And it makes sense if you think about it from like a utilitarian perspective. You know, back then, you know, people have always been having sex for pleasure and not just for making kids.
Yeah.
But you know, it makes sense when you think about it, like, you know, saving sex for a marriage union so that you don't accidentally have kids with somebody that's not going to stick around. You know, it just makes sense.
Then you don't have shotgun weddings because that was probably a thing. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think in the Bible, it's basically like the Old Testament, you know, if you try it, you buy it kind of thing. So basically, if you were in that situation, you would be required to get married. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, it is mainly that sex should be reserved for marriage, but it's like, if you have sex before, then you're really supposed to get married. It's
right.
A little of each, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of, I guess we've covered a lot of ground already. So I'm wondering where we should take it here. Do you want to do Earth to Damn White Guys, or is there something else?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is subtlety. So this is the thing that always bothers me in movies. That movies always generally portray evil as really, like, you can tell who the good guys and the bad guys are in every movie.
Right.
Like, look at Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
The stormtroopers and Darth Vader. His helmet a Nazi helmet. He dresses all black and white, no colors, because black and white stark. It's like almost shouting out, "We are evil." Mm-hmm. And who would follow that? I mean, actually, in some cases, like the Nazis, their propaganda and their symbology was pretty damn evil looking, and people followed it. But most evil is really subtle. Mm-hmm. And this is the whole point. It's comes about from like our humans' actions and the consequences of human actions. Mm-hmm. We may often think what we're doing is right, but the consequences of the actions turn out to be evil.
Right.
And so movies don't really, I don't think they really think about that. It's like bad guys. Like they never really explain bad guys' motivations. Why would they decide to, I guess sometimes money, like maybe they're hijacking a plane for money, or I guess maybe sometimes like causes, maybe like terrorism or something like that. But it's never, it's often not clear why, especially like James Bond villains. Why are they doing that?
Well, it's tricky because I think stories have always entertained us, but I think they entertain us now more than they used to. I think we used to use stories to help us make sense of our world and how to get by and how to live fulfilling lives. Like with mythology and things like that. So you have it in that, when you think of it from that perspective, it almost makes sense why you need opposing forces in order to tell a story. But I agree that like when you're watching a movie just for entertainment value, those characters, you know, those archetypes kind of fall flat a little bit.
Mm. Yeah. We watched, The Avengers, Thanos, Revenge of Thanos or whatever. Yeah. Like I didn't understand his motivations. I didn't like the movie. It was okay. The movie's okay. But I didn't get why he was doing what he was doing. He's just doing it because he's a jerk, right? It wasn't well explained to me. I didn't believe his rationale.
Therefore, I think it was. I think they were walking a tightrope because it's kind of controversial to say there's too many people on the planet.
Yeah,
but you know, I think that was basically his motivation. But he thought there were too many people.
The worst for me was Wonder Woman. That was just terrible from the standpoint of good and evil, because the whole moral of the story was about good and evil, theoretically. Like it was Mars, I guess, who was just like this chaos force, and Wonder Woman was like trying to uphold the good. In Wonder Woman, they're set in the middle of the First World War, which is the best example of how humans blunder into evil. It's the subtlety of evil, you know, being caused by the decisions that humans make. And instead of having like humans telling a story about how humans create evil themselves, they have the humans being pawns of these evil magical forces that are controlling their actions, that takes away the responsibility of the humans themselves, really. Right. Where humans are the ones who are responsible, right, for the evil. But they're not telling that story. They're absolving the humans of that responsibility, saying, well, there's these like evil gods who are telling them to do evil things, and so the humans aren't really responsible, and evil's just caused by this external force.
Yeah.
It's like the exact opposite of the story you should tell. Another good example of this is Lord of the Rings. So Frodo, when they go to get picked up by Aragorn, they meet Aragorn, Strider. When he sees Aragorn, Aragorn's like this shabby guy who's like disheveled and with a beard and all this, and he's like dark and lives in the shadows, and he's slanky and probably hasn't had a shower in a long time. And he says, "I think a servant of the enemy would look fairer and feel fouler." So basically saying that Aragorn, because of his disheveled looks and stuff, he's probably not actually evil, whereas evil would actually look good, and you wouldn't be able to tell. It would like try to entice you with its beauty, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of like, you wouldn't be disgusted by it, you'd be enchanted by it. Which is true. It's a great quote. However, it's kind of funny for Lord of the Rings, and particularly the movies, because it's the opposite how of evil
it is
portrayed.
It is. You're right.
Sauron.
That's so true. I never thought about that.
And the orcs and stuff. They're like the ugliest things ever. Doesn't make any
mistake.
Sense.
Mistake. They had a Freudian slip.
It is a big mistake, except I think it's, I mean, what he's saying is true, but then he makes this exact same mistake.
Yeah.
Except for maybe Saruman, who's like a good guy who kind of like turns to evil. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, we can go to Earth to Damn White Guys.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's see what the Twitter has to say about evil.
Earth to Damn White Guys. Earth to Damn White Guys.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised by this. So I put out the poll, good and evil are A, absolute, or B, subjective. And I was kind of impressed because out of almost 1,000 votes, 76% say subjective rather than absolute, which is definitely what I think. But it's not what I thought people think.
Yeah, you know? I would have guessed higher on the other one. I thought people would think that
you can categorize things into A and B.
Yeah. Interesting.
But you can't. Sometimes you can. But actually, one thing I want to say about the movie is the best movie I've ever seen for portraying evil is called Conspiracy. And it's about the Nazis coming together at this conference where they discussed the Holocaust, basically. They discussed that they were going to do the Holocaust and how it was going to work and stuff. And it's a two-hour meeting, and it took place in for real. And it's just these like officials from Germany, from the Nazis, came in, sat down in this beautiful house, had this like great wine and food and stuff, and they're all like looking spiffy, and they just like lay it out in like 2 hours discussing exactly how they're gonna do it.
That is,
and they're all like, they're all like business, they're all like efficiency, and they all kind of think they're doing the right thing to some extent. And that is evil. Like,
that's primeval.
The best example of like what evil looks like. It's like humans coming together, making decisions that have massive consequences, and, you know, kind of just doing it without external forces.
Yeah, that is scary stuff.
And that's, you know, the opposite of the way that captures evil in a way that Hollywood doesn't often portray it.
And, mm-hmm. I got to watch that. I've never seen that.
It's a really good movie, but it's all dialogue. It's like the cheapest movie ever because it's just people, it's just actors in a room talking. That's it.
Yeah, they broke the first rule of great storytelling: show, don't tell.
And they just they start out like with something different, kind of in mind, and within the course of 2 hours, they end up at like the most evil thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, wow, that is crazy. Well, I think to start moving towards a close here, I think that we're only aware of evil because of our mammalian part of our mind, the limbic system. I think that if we were just reptiles, I think this is why reptiles eat their young without feeling any remorse. They just like, they're just trying to survive. They're just survival masters, you know? So, but we're like, humans are a walking conflict of interest because we don't just have a reptilian mind that we need in order to survive. We also have to, we live in society, so we have to engage our mammalian part of our brain in order to get along with people and live fulfilling lives. And so, you know, empathy really serves us well. And if we didn't have empathy, we probably wouldn't even be aware of evil and probably wouldn't care. You know, we'd probably just do whatever is good for ourselves in the moment, even if it meant eating our kids, you know. But I think it's even more complicated because of our neocortex, the human part of our brain. I guess it's not human because dolphins have neocortex and stuff, but the higher part of our brain that came later is like, it even adds a tougher dynamic to it because we're like self-aware and we could like, we can communicate really accurately with words and we have like pattern recognition abilities and things like that. So it's, I think it's tough for us, but I feel like in order to understand evil, it's like, I kind of see it as some like constant juggling act. And no matter what situation you're in, like what impulse am I being fed right now? What do I need to, which one do I need to act on in this moment? Is this safe? You know, that's kind of how I see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Humans have a moral compass that comes about from limbic system, mammalian brain, but also neocortex and just experience living in society. And just we have to. It's good and evil is how we treat each other. We have to, if you want to live in a society amongst other people, you have to learn rules of behavior, of conduct. And that's the basis of good, I think.
Yeah. And more so than just having to do it. Like it's not even just an obligation. It's like,
oh, yeah, it's intrinsic. Yeah. I mean, it's like, intrinsic in our genes. It's not like intrinsic, like some external force, but it is within our genes to work together.
It's a
but
gift.
We also have a gift.
It's a gift to be able to work together. I mean, like, you know,
yeah,
like,
it's helpful. Yeah.
The reason that, the limbic system was able to evolve and stay around and benefit us, I guess, is because like hunting in packs was more beneficial than just like going out on your own and things like that. So, you know, I think it's like a gift to have empathy and to want the best for others around you. And so I think it's like, it's not just that you have to, cause you're in society. It's also like, hey, your mammal brain's there for a reason. Use it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For sure.
So cool. That was very, we covered a lot of ground. That was very thorough.
Yeah. I just want to end with a quote from Darwin.
Okay.
We stopped looking for monsters under our bed when we realized that they were inside us.
Whoa, that is good. That is good. The reptilian mind, Darwin. That's crazy. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. This has been Two Damn White Guys on a Brief History of Evil. We hope you enjoyed it. Please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts if you feel so inclined. We really appreciate it. Those are so helpful. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that. I'm at Julian Was Here. Andrew is at Mars Raider. And we do these every Monday, and we hope to have you back next week. So, yeah, thanks for listening. Have a great
week.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Cheers. Don't be evil.
That's Google's model. I'm not sure they're great at it, actually.
If only they lived by it.
Yeah. I made